Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. For thousands of people, the COVID-19 vaccine is a welcome relief. At the same time, many Native people remain skeptical of it. A new study looks into the gap in confidence about the vaccine. And health officials are looking for ways to get out the message that the vaccine is safe and effective. Tribal leaders and others are particularly worried about the toll the disease is taking on elders. We'll dive deeper into all of this right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Pueblo of Acoma in New Mexico has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services over the closure of services at the Acoma Cañoncito Laguna Hospital located on Acoma lands. The lawsuit accuses the Indian Health Service of causing harm, especially during a pandemic when inpatient care and emergency services were shut down in November 2020. The tribe says an Acoma patient who tested positive for COVID-19 died before he could be transported to a hospital. The tribe claims the death is directly traceable to limited services. Pueblo of Acoma Governor Brian Vio told reporters Friday there are many other examples of serious harm to the community and says emergencies that would be handled by the hospital now have to be cared for at other locations as far as more than an hour's drive away from the Pueblo.
The closure has affected the lives of Acoma tribal members, compromising their mental health, and now increasing the financial burden for some. The actions of the Indian Health Service have created what looks and feels like third world conditions and not America in the 21st century. No other town, city, or civilized country would find this acceptable. Yet, it happens way too often in Native American communities.
The lawsuit accuses Health and Human Services of failing to abide by federal law and failing to use federal coronavirus funding to address Acoma's needs. Plans to reduce the hospital to an urgent care unit during regular business hours is expected to begin Monday, February 1st. Vio says the Pueblo is asking President Joe Biden and his administration to reverse the decision.
I truly hope the president will step in and order his Department of Health and Human Services and the Indian Health Service to put an end to this life and death situation and keep the hospital fully operational. Otherwise, we will have no other choice except to pursue the litigation we have filed to the very end.
The ACL Hospital has served the Pueblos of Acoma and Laguna and the Navajo community since the 1970s. The reduction of services comes as Laguna plans to open a new facility, which removed funding from the ACL Hospital. The Navajo community removed its allocation in 2016. The Indian Health Service did not provide a statement about the lawsuit. The IHS is currently without a director due to the presidential transition. Vio says the Pueblo realizes there's a transition, but is making sure to keep communication about the hospital going with the agency, other federal departments, the state of New Mexico, and members of Congress. The Chugach Alaska Corporation recently reacquired land that has been in private hands since the 1900s. The sale was announced in mid-January. The Native Regional Corporation purchased more than 150 acres of land from the Nature Conservancy, located at the mouth of the Copper River Delta near Point Martin, Alaska.
The Copper River Delta was such a rich resource area. It was kind of the migration corridor for all the different cultural groups in Alaska.
That's John F.C. Johnson, the corporation's vice president for cultural resources. The region's a confluence of cultures, including Supiak, Tlingit, and Eyak, and Atna Athabascan people.
Your heritage and culture is priceless. I mean, what price you put on a grave of your relatives? You can't put a price on it.
Johnson says the Heritage Foundation will work with cultural representatives from other surrounding Native groups to discuss future ideas on how to best utilize the land. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing scholarships to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Applications for the upcoming school year accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shifriktui via Skype. A new study from the Urban Indian Health Institute found 3/4 of the Native participants were willing to get the COVID-19 vaccine, but almost the same percentage also want evidence the vaccine is safe now and in the long term. Today, we'll hear more about this study and what medical professionals are telling their patients about the vaccine. Also, the pandemic remains a serious threat for tribal elders and officials are concerned about the loss of language and culture keepers. We'll check in with the National Indian Council on Aging about the best ways to protect and honor our elders. But first, we head over to the Navajo Nation to get an update. Joining us now from Rindle Rock, Arizona, is Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez. Our pleasure to have him here with us. President Nez, thank you for joining us for another Native Calling. In on the line with us, let's go to President Nez. Are you there, President Nez? Okay, let's see if we can get him back on the line. While we do that, if you would like to join us anytime during this hour, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We definitely look forward to your calls. And of course, where things currently stand with the rates on your nation, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And let's see if we have President Nez. We're going to try reconnecting. President Nez, welcome to Native America Calling.
Well, thank you, Tara, for having us on your show once again.
We appreciate it. And President Nez, just want to check in and understand a little bit more of where things currently stand in terms of COVID-19 numbers and how it's affecting the Navajo Nation. Please give us an update.
All right. Well, thank you again, and to all your listeners for getting updates from your show here on the Navajo Nation. Total confirmed cases throughout these several months, 28,325. So in the last 24 hours, 103 positive cases. Total confirmed deaths, 1,018, and 4 additional deaths. In 24 hours, our thoughts and prayers go out to those that have lost their loved ones to COVID-19, not just on the Navajo, but all across the country and all over the world. And, you know, we are seeing a downward trend, flattening of the curve here on the Navajo Nation. We had some very strict protocols in place, mask mandates, lockdowns, stay-at-home orders, and those have helped to keep the virus from spreading, as you see in other states throughout the country, including Arizona. I think Arizona at one time was per capita number one in the world. But as tribes know, you're like your lands are a little island, and everyone surrounding tribal lands does affect the number increase in your nation. And that's what's happening here also on Navajo.
And President Nez, do you have any thoughts to your nation of just thinking, you know, we've been a year into this and we've come a long way too. I know early on you talked about efforts to wanting to bring numbers down, to flatten the curve.
And you just said it's happening. Your thoughts on where we are right now in terms of facing COVID-19?
Right. You know, sometimes it's difficult, and I think other tribal leaders throughout the country recognize that. You know, you do your very best for your nation, for your tribe, your constituents. But sometimes other jurisdictions around you do not take the virus seriously, and what affects what happens off the nation, off the reservation, does affect on the reservation. And I'm appreciative of the new administration coming in, putting a mask mandate on all federal facilities, federal workers. You know, that's just a start. Also, you know, getting resources to everyone and vaccines to the tribes and to the states. And we're looking forward to getting our percentage higher here on the Navajo Nation in terms of vaccinating our Navajo citizens. As of 2 days ago, the vaccination summary here on the Navajo Nation is 64,713 vaccines were given to our nation. 47,455 of those doses got into the arms of our Navajo people. So that's 73%. And this is not counting the weekends. See, we reopened our weekends. There's no lockdowns and curfews on the weekend because we're wanting to get more of our citizens vaccinated. Saturday, there was a big vaccination blitz in Gallup Indian Medical Center at the University of New Mexico Gallup campus. Over 1,000 people there got vaccinated. And we, on Sunday in Fort Defiant, St. Michael's, Tehetsoy Medical Center, another 1,000 in one day there that got their shots. And we're of course, the race is to get as many people vaccinated because of these different variants that are starting to show up throughout the country. The UK, South African, and the Brazilian variant. And so that is concerning. I think all of us throughout the country are racing to get as many people vaccinated.
And President Nez, I also understand that there was also a vaccine drive not too long ago where 2,400 people were also vaccinated in one day. And you mentioned some other places, too. Tell us about the kind of efforts to make things like this happen, especially at these high numbers. What kind of things were put in place? What kind of things happen?
Well, we all recognize the underfunding of the Indian Health Services, and that does affect how we can get direct services out to our people. And I was out there at many of these vaccination events, watching firsthand, hearing from the elders, hearing from the healthcare workers. And many of them, all of them, from Monday through Friday, these healthcare professionals are juggling, you know, testing, COVID-19 testing. They're also now the COVID-19 vaccination. They have to take care of their patients. They also have to take care of the COVID-19 positive cases from Monday through Friday. And it's taking a toll. I mean, a lot of healthcare workers on the Navajo Nation are reaching that point where they're burning out. And so to see some of that shift to the weekend has been helpful. And yesterday at the Tehetsoy Medical Center, I was told that there were over 300 staff and employees just focusing on vaccination. And that's what type of resources go into a mass vaccination like that, getting 1,000, 2,000 at a time in one day. And it does take a lot of manpower. And we're hoping with the new administration coming in that we will be able to get some volunteers, maybe some other healthcare workers to come on the Navajo Nation to assist in getting our citizens vaccinated.
Well, thank you for that. On the line with us today is President Jonathan Nez of the Navajo Nation, and he has given us an update on where things currently stand with COVID-19. And if you have any thoughts, Maybe you're a part of the nation too, and you have some things to share. Maybe you're one of those numbers, one of those individuals who got your vaccination. You can tell us about it, 1-800-996-2848. And President Nez, later on in the hour, we're going to get more focused on COVID-19 and our elders. And is there anything you want to share with our listeners, especially about protecting them?
Well, they are the keepers of our language and our way of life teaching. And it is important that, you know, we protect that traditional and intellectual knowledge. But at the same time, these elders are in the most vulnerable population category. And we are protecting them as much as we can, because the over 1,000 individuals who have passed here on the Navajo Nation, 2/3 of them were our elders. And so we are doing our very best to vaccinate those individuals, those elders first. We started out at 75 and over. Now we're at 65 and over. And just this weekend, we are now vaccinating 55 years of age and older. So it is very important to us to protect and also to advocate vaccinating most or all of our elders. But of course, it's voluntary.
Sure. And any specific message to our elders directly? About a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, for us as leaders, we took the vaccine not to jump to the head of the line, but to reassure our Navajo citizens that may be on the fence, maybe wondering if it's safe for me. And, you know, seeing their president and their leaders, and also the healthcare workers getting the vaccine, I think it brings confidence to those elders in taking the vaccine. As you mentioned earlier, 3/4 of our population in Indian country, I think that's the same here on Navajo too, that are interested in getting the vaccine. And so a lot of the public outreach, answering the constituents' questions, have helped in reassuring the public that it is safe in our eyes to take this vaccine.
Well, President Jonathan Nez, thank you for joining us today here on the program. And again, if you'd like to join us, dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we also want to know, how are things in terms of our elders? We know that protecting our elders has been a big priority throughout the entire pandemic. And if there are some thoughts on that you'd like to share, 1-800-996-2848. And now that we are in vaccine circles, tell us about your thoughts. Phone lines are open. Kevin Washburn is back on the job as Dean of the University of Iowa College of Law after helping out with Joe Biden's transition. He previously served as the Department of the Interior's Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs during the Obama administration. He's our native in the spotlight, and we'll talk with him on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans, available at 1-844-762-8483, or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. We are talking about the vaccine, COVID-19, and our elders today. And if you'd like to share some thoughts, go ahead and dial in now, 1-800-996-2848. And right now, we are going to go to Anchorage, Alaska. We have Dr. Donna Galbraith with us. She is a family practice doctor and the Senior Medical Director of Quality Assurance at the South Central Foundation. And Donna is Atna Athabaskan. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Galbraith. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for asking me to join you.
And very interested to hear about updates in Alaska, but also a note of disclosure before we go further. The South Central Foundation is a financial sponsor of Quantic Broadcast Corporation, the parent company of Native America Calling. And with that, Dr. Galbraith, tell us a little bit about how things are going so far, especially when it comes to vaccines. How many have been distributed?
We've given out about 12,000 vaccines currently. It's a huge effort. You know, you've heard from President Nez having lots of people doing testing and vaccination and just regular health care. It is a huge stretch to do this, but we've set up a couple of vaccine clinics, and they're working very well, and so we're able to get a lot of people through every day to get vaccinated.
And so what are you hearing from elders about getting the vaccine?
Well, elders are actually, for the most part, really excited about getting the vaccine. We started off, with our elders first because they, age is an independent risk factor. And so we started with people 85 and older, and then 75 and older, and then 65 and older. And we actually called all of these people to see if they wanted to get a vaccine, and then we got them in. And the elders have been very accepting of the vaccine. They're appreciative. They when they have an appointment, they show up for their appointment, and if they can't, they call in. And they're just happy and pleased, and they actually make our employees feel really good because they're so appreciative and so complimentary, and it makes people just happy to be doing the work that they're doing. So our elders have been pretty accepting of the vaccine. They want their pictures taken. They're willing to wait around the 15 to 30 minutes. Some of them want to wait a little bit longer, but that's fine, and they're doing well.
And so there are concerns about the vaccine, and for elders, who may not have got it or who are leery or don't have enough information, what would you like to say to that population?
The vaccine is safe. There are some, minor side effects that are considered normal, such as, when you get the injection in your arm, your arm can be sore. You can also have some redness or swelling at the site. You also get, feeling tired, headachy, muscle aches, joint pain. I mean, you don't get all of these, but you can. You can get some nausea. Your lymph nodes can swell up. But that can happen with any vaccine. So a lot of times people have experienced side effects like that from other vaccines in the past. So this is no different. People are leery because there's been lots of stuff in the news about anaphylactic reaction, which is a severe allergic reaction. But as the vaccine has been given out to more and more people, and actually millions of people now, the anaphylactic reaction is still pretty low. So like with the Pfizer vaccine, there's only 11 anaphylactic reactions per million, and in the Moderna, 2.5 anaphylactic reactions per million doses given. So it's really low. But the good thing about that is everybody's prepared for an anaphylactic reaction, even though they're extremely rare and they can be treated. So no one has had had a problem in terms of like dying from an anaphylactic reaction. There have been no deaths. There's been also some mild allergic reactions, but for the most part, people have done well. And like I said, millions of people have received this both vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, throughout the world, and there have been nothing unexpected turning up in terms of adverse reactions.
And Dr. Galbraith, what changes now that we have the vaccine, where we were 3 months ago, and then now here we are, what do you feel has changed knowing that this vaccine is being distributed not only in your circles, but also across the country? What does that mean to you?
Well, I have hope. the more people that are vaccinated, the better. It slows the spread down. So a lot of people have probably heard about herd immunity. That just means the more people that are vaccinated, the less likely it is that the virus will spread throughout the population. That means that, you know, enough people get the vaccine. So the more people that get vaccinated, the better it is. And there are these new variants now that have, you know, people watching them and a little nervous about them because some of the variants, the vaccine isn't as effective. But the good news is it still is effective. So it still can do a lot of work to help prevent the vaccine. Or the vaccine can help prevent COVID from spreading throughout populations.
Thank you for that. And let's go ahead and go to a call. We're going to say hi to Douglas, who is here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Douglas, thanks for reaching out. Your thoughts. Go ahead.
Hey, you bet. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate that. Listen, I am a healthcare provider, and I volunteer with numerous organizations, and my plan is very soon to be out in the Gallup area of New Mexico, helping with the Navajo Nation doing vaccines. But I wanted to encourage everybody that's hearing me to not be afraid of this injection. And here's the deal. The virus is in the air, right? For the most part, we get it by breathing it. And you're probably going to breathe some in at some point in the next year. You may be around somebody, it may get you, it may not. It depends how much you get in. But the interesting thing about this vaccine is it's not a live virus. So what these professionals have done, and these are people that science is what they base their information and things on. And they basically, if you think of like a Lego ball, let's say you had a Lego ball, and that's your cell that the virus wants to attach to. And let's say on top of it, there's those six or eight little dots of a Lego block. And so what happens is this virus might come in and it'll find those six dots and that virus will attach to that cell. Okay. And then you've got it. Okay. It's got it in you. And depending on how much you get, you may get sick. You may not. Now, so here's what is interesting about this vaccine. This vaccine is like taking a Lego block that was made. We made this Lego block, and it goes on top of the cell, and everything's copacetic, everything's good. Then when that virus comes in, it attaches on top of that Lego block vaccine, and the vaccine notices it right away and starts attacking it. Okay.
And, you know, it's a very interesting way of explaining it. And I haven't heard it explained that way before. And Dr. Galbraith, I wanted to get your take on, you know, this is something we can get our head around because sometimes things get complicated. Any thoughts about his analogy or just his explanation? Go ahead, Dr. Galbraith. And, of course, thank you for giving us a ring, Douglas.
I think it's a good analogy. Probably everybody has heard things about the spike protein, and so that's the little things coming off the Lego that he was describing is the spike protein, and probably people have seen pictures of the virus, too, since it's in the news and it has those things sticking out. So that's what your body recognizes, and it recognizes that as being foreign, and since it's created antibodies to it, then it can attack the virus a lot faster than if it had never seen it. So it can decrease the viral load in your body and potentially keep you from getting sick. And if you do get sick, you don't get as sick.
Again, thank you, Douglas, for calling in. Maybe you want to share some thoughts too. 1-800-996-2848. And Dr. Galbraith, is there anything that you feel that people just really need to hear about getting the vaccine, maybe even what to do before or after?
Well, they recommend that, you know, you not do anything before. A lot of people say, you know, should I take acetaminophen or Tylenol or ibuprofen? Before, but they recommend not taking anything before you get the vaccine, just to give your immune system a chance to react in a good way. And then if you do get some of the side effects after the vaccine, such as your arm is really sore or something, then it's okay to use acetaminophen or ibuprofen. But beforehand, no. And I think one of the things that people should do before they go in is just relax. And that's easier said than done, because I know, like, for myself, if I go get any vaccine, I get a little nervous before the vaccine. But, you know, if you can relax, if you, you know, take some, your phone or something to read or something, so you're just not thinking a whole lot about the vaccine, and can actually cause your body to just, you know, be in the moment and not worry about things. I think the experience will be better. In our vaccine clinics, we've actually have some music playing and just lots of people to talk to people who are getting their vaccine, so that people aren't nervous about it. And that's the main thing, is just making certain that you don't get too nervous about getting the vaccine, because it is safe.
And the other two thing that I was thinking of is, you know, as we're talking about this and just hearing what people's thoughts might be, what about people who have other kinds of conditions, especially in our tribal communities? You know, we have high rates of different things. Is there any information you'd like to share just for folks to inform them more if somebody has a pre-existing condition? You know, we talk about heart disease. We talk about diabetes. Any thoughts?
Yes, all of those things increase your risk of having a serious complication from COVID, from having the infection. So if somebody is currently under treatment for cancer, or they have kidney disease or lung disease.
We kind of cut out. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Okay. Or they have kidney disease or lung disease or heart disease. Even obesity, diabetes, all those things can increase your risk if you get infected with COVID. So people with those type diagnoses should get the vaccine sooner than others, just because their risks of having a complication are much higher. One of the biggest risks is actually age. So if you if you're older and you have one of those conditions, then I would highly encourage you to get a vaccine, because it will help help significantly. The vaccine actually is 95% effective in decreasing the risks of having a serious complication from having a COVID infection. And there aren't, I can't even think of another vaccine that works that well. So that's a good thing.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I'm going to take another call. We're going to say hi to Joe, who's in Eagle Butte today, tuned in on KIPI. Joe, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. I have a question that keeps being told that, you know, nobody. Well, anyway, my question is, say somebody has a really bad reaction, somebody dies, or a whole community is affected. Who is actually liable for any and all of this?
Okay, thank you for that. Dr. Galbraith, any thoughts?
I am assuming that's in reference to the vaccine, having a serious reaction from the vaccine.
I'm going to assume the same. Your thoughts?
So for the vaccine, there is a federal program if there is a serious side effect that would help the family of that person. They can sign up for that. There's information about that online. I guess the good news is there has never been a serious reaction. There has never been death from the COVID vaccines. There's been the anaphylactic reactions, the severe allergic reactions that I mentioned, but no one has died because of the vaccine.
All right. And Joe, thank you for asking. You can ask your questions too, 1-800-996-2848. Also here today out of Seattle, Washington, is Abigail Echohawk. She is the director of the Urban Indian Health Institute and Chief Research Officer at the Seattle Indian Health Board. She is Pawnee. And Abigail, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling.
Thank you for having me.
And so, Abigail, we shared some of the numbers at the start of the hour of just some of the findings. Take us to more about this study and specifically, I guess, kind of how it came to be and some of the key findings.
Yeah. So as in the Urban Indian Health Institute is a tribal public health institute where we're looking at ensuring that our people are getting the absolutely best knowledge on what's going on with not only COVID, but the COVID vaccine. It was really important to us to ensure that as these materials were created around what the vaccine does, making sure that our people were getting the right information that they needed to make a good decision about whether or not they wanted to get vaccinated. And when we looked nationwide, what we saw was a lot of states, a lot of counties, putting together these vaccine campaigns based on old information. So old data that had been gathered on other types of vaccines, old surveys that have been done, but we hadn't seen anybody do anything national where they gathered information from Native people across the country about their hesitancies, about their concerns, and about why they would want to get vaccinated. So we decided that it was in our best interest of all Native people to collect a survey from folks across the country on their thoughts on the COVID vaccine. And so we started that survey in December, closed it in December. It was only open for a couple of weeks. We did it through social media, through email lists, through Native people passing the word one to the other the way that we always do it. And we were able to gather a significant number of responses that allowed us to put out this report. And this report is really important because if we're going to make sure that the questions that folks just had while talking to Dr. Galbraith are being answered when they're looking at materials in the clinic, when they're looking at materials and information that is shared with them by social media, through the mail, from their doctor's offices, wherever they're getting it, we need to make sure that it's information that meets the needs of Native people. So we found some really significant...
To be able to get that specific view, it does take knowing our communities too. And I'm also interested in your approach to this and, of course, more of the findings that are now numbers people are using to think about and understand vaccines for the COVID-19 and how they are affecting our communities. Hang tight. We're going to go to break here, but there is more ahead here on the program. And again, the invitation for you to join us is there. Go ahead and dial in 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, who have been providing scholarships and other support to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Scholarship applications for the upcoming school year are being accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Application deadline is May 31st.
We're tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and if you would like to join us on the conversation, go ahead and give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We go back to Abigail Echohawk, who joins us out of Seattle, Washington, and she is the director of the Urban Indian Health Institute. And we're taking a look at a study that was put out. And Abigail, you were talking about, you know, the importance of understanding our Native communities, getting them information they need. Please pick up from there. Anything more you want to share about forming this survey and how many people and where people were surveyed?
Yeah, so we were able to get respondents from more than from approximately 46 states across the country. We had a really good representation of Native people from both rural and urban areas, and we saw some really interesting things. I think one of the most that was really gave me a lot of hope was one of the most significant findings that we had, and one was that 75% of the people surveyed were willing to get the COVID-19 vaccine, but they were also within that group people who were hesitant. While they were willing to get it, they needed to get the right information to understand whether or not it was safe, if it had been tested properly, and making sure that it was going to be a benefit to their community. The thing that really made me excited was we asked a question about whether or not this was a decision that people were making as part of a community, whether or not they were doing it for their family, their tribe, their community, or whether they felt this was an individual decision. And so 74% of all the respondents said this was a decision they were making as a community member, as somebody responsible to their family, their tribes, and their community. And that is very different than what is seen across the United States. That same question was asked in Black communities and Hispanic communities, and about 50% of them said it was an individual decision. What we see here is that 74% of Native people saying they're making this decision on behalf of their community is our cultural values of looking towards protecting our elders and protecting that next generation. So we see the strengths of Native people and how we're going to overcome this virus. It's all in our cultural value systems. And so our report highlights that. And along with our report, we put out a number of materials, including information on the COVID vaccine. When you look at those materials, you actually find information on the clinical trials and how many Native people were included in them. We used this survey to create the materials to answer the questions that Native people had, because they deserve that information to ensure that they can make a good decision on whether or not to get vaccinated. I see such hope in this survey, especially since what we saw shining through is that our cultural values are there, that we are going to do what it takes as people to protect those next generations.
And Abigail, there's a wealth of information that came from this. You also got a view into people who are hesitant to get the vaccine. What are some of the things you learned and their reasons?
Yeah, the hesitancy is one that was really interesting to see, because we saw a lot of the historical missteps that the federal government has perpetuated against our people. People were very mistrustful of whether or not the CDC and the FDA and others making decisions about whether or not these vaccines were safe, whether or not they were making those decisions in a way that actually took the science and had science behind it. And they were mistrustful of whether or not Native people were getting tested on. One of the things that we've seen is Native people are in some of the highest priority groups. We're trying to make sure that Native people, because we have higher risk factors, like Dr. Galbraith talked about, that we are at the front lines of being able to get the vaccine if it is something our people would like. And a lot of folks were wondering, are we getting tested on? Is this just a way for the government to keep testing on us like they've done previously? So when we saw those hesitancies, it creates a way for us to understand, how do we address these? So the vaccine fact sheets that I talked about specifically talk about how the testing was done, how many Native people were included in it, so folks could actually see that this science was done well, that this is good information, it's been properly tested, Native people were part of the clinical trials that created these vaccines, and that we have an opportunity to protect our next generations by getting this vaccine.
All right, thank you for that. We now go to the phone lines. We're going to go ahead and say hello to Melvin, who is in Santee, Nebraska today, tuned in on KZYK. Melvin, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on air.
Yes. This morning I got my second shot, and I was really glad to get it done with. But the reason I'd done it, too, was two reasons. One was the community, and, you know, I've missed a lot of funerals of my friend because I couldn't go because of being quarantined or knowing the virus might be around. So, you know, we didn't get to pay our respects. And the other reason I did it was, you know, 90 to 95% effective. Heck, I go to the casino quite a bit. I'm a gambler. I like those odds, you know.
Yeah, so, I hear you on the numbers. Thank you for calling, Melvin. Good to hear your voice. We take another one. Let's go ahead and say hi to Michelle, who is in Alaska, tuned in on KSDP. Michelle, thank you for calling. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good morning. I was just wondering, to the man that was asking about who's liable for the, you know, if any troubles arise, and Dr. Galbraith was talking about there's a program set up to record those. She is right. And to the gentleman that was asking the question about anyone being liable for them, nobody is actually liable. Under the federal law, the vaccine manufacturers cannot be held liable for the vaccination problems that might occur in some cases. But I was going to ask about whether anyone knows what's going on with the elders in Norway. They have 23 elders that died in their senior homes, and so they have called a pause on them, on people who are frail or otherwise or sick with another indication, and or allergies. Obviously, we know that. And then here in the U.S., the CDC is reporting 320 29 deaths, and I don't know how many of those are elders, but I wondered if someone would be able to tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, and I'll go to Dr. Galbraith. Are you still there, and any thoughts?
I don't know what's going on in Norway in terms of dying because of the COVID vaccine. Everything I have read has said that no one has died because of the vaccine. There's a certain number of people who just, people die. And there's a certain percentage that just because of age or sickness or whatever are going to die, whether they get the vaccine or not, or whether they get COVID or not. And so sometimes it's hard to sort that information out. But at this point in time, when they look at any of the deaths related to the vaccine, they don't appear to be related to the vaccine at all. That's everything that I've read.
All right. Thank you for that. Got another caller. We're going to say hi to Santiago in Pewaukee, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Thank you. I have a question. I'm wondering, with the virus mutating, if this vaccine is effective on these new variants.
Okay. Thank you for asking. And Dr. Galbraith, I turn to you again.
The vaccine is still effective on the variants. It's not as effective, and they're still doing studies to find out how effective it is. There's more concern about the South African variant, but they have done some studies in South Africa, and it is still effective. It's just not the 90%. It's probably going to be in the 50th percentile, but we're still waiting for data on that. But even if it's not in the 90 to 95th percentile in terms of being effective, it's still worth it to get that vaccine. We get vaccines all the time that are, 40 to 60% effective. So having a 50% effective is really good. But they're watching that very closely because there are so many variants and they're doing lots of studies. This is just such a quickly moving virus and lots of things we don't know about. And so they're keeping tabs on all of these things so we can have up-to-date information the minute they know it.
Thank you very much. And before I bring in my next guest, Abigail, I definitely want to give people the information. If they want to read this study or gather information from it, where do they find it?
They can find the study on our website, uihi.org, under our COVID resources. And it's really important to ensure that both your tribal communities, your counties and states, when they're creating these COVID vaccine health campaigns, that they're using information that meets the needs of Native people. The way that we feel about these things are different than the rest of the country. So we need people to use these kinds of information to create proper materials. And then answering some of the questions that folks have just had. One of the ways that everybody can contribute once you've gotten your COVID vaccine is to sign up for the text messages that the CDC will send you. Well, they'll check on you every day about how you're feeling, what symptoms you have, and you can be part of the science. You can contribute back to that. And when you get your COVID vaccine, your providers will be giving you that information. Sign up. Send in that information. Let them know how you're feeling. It's a way for us to be part of growing the science. And around the mutations of the virus, is one thing to know is every virus mutates. Tracking these variants is very important. That's part of what we do across all viruses when we look at the science of these. And as we look at these mutations and these new variants, knowing that even 50% of being, less likely to get the COVID vaccine is huge. It's huge for you, it's huge for your family, and it's huge for your tribe. So please consider getting the vaccine because protecting our people is who we are as Native people, and we have the opportunity to protect our next generations with the COVID vaccine.
All right. Thank you, Abigail. And right now we're going to turn to our guest, another guest who's joining us at Albuquerque, New Mexico. We have Larry Curley with us. He is the executive director for the National Indian Council on Aging, and he's Navajo. Our pleasure to have him here. Larry, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling.
Thank you for the opportunity to be on. Thank you very much.
And Larry, I wonder how many elders are reaching out to NICOA to get more information or some of the efforts that are going on there too to help our elders, especially when it comes to understanding the vaccine, understanding COVID-19. Anything you want to share about what you are hearing from our Native elders about how they're doing or just their thoughts on the vaccine?
Basically repeating some of the people that just spoke, is that there are some people out there who are very leery of the vaccine. And what we are doing from our end is to encourage our elders to take the shot. It's safe. There is a lot of science behind the vaccines that are there. And what's disconcerting to me is that when you take a look at the number of deaths in Indian country, as of January 29th, you know, there are 4,091 people, American Indians, Alaska Natives, that have passed as a result of the COVID. And just looking at some other data that I've been looking at, approximately 60% of those deaths have been attributed to people who are 65 and over. And of that 4,091 that I mentioned, if that's the case, then there are over 2,455 elders that have passed away from the COVID. And to me, that is a loss of culture, a loss of customs, traditions, language, and history that we've lost. And if they were 65 years of age, we have lost about 159,000 years of life experience that we will never learn again. So that's my concern, is that, but they are reaching out to us. They're asking questions. We have a website that provides the most up-to-date information. So that's been very helpful. Hopefully that elders are accessing our site as well.
And as we heard in the survey too, some of the hesitancy is mistrust and maybe even, you know, our history with the U.S. government. Larry, our elders that are alive today have experienced a very unique life and view into the world, including a lot of hardships, and some of them even heard it firsthand from their own grandparents. Any thoughts on this aspect of maybe why there might be mistrust?
Well, a lot of our elders who are 65 and over, you know, have experienced the boarding school process, the relocation process, the those programs that the federal government has implemented in past years. I think that there's still a lot of memory attached to that. And I've heard from some elders saying, I don't want to be a guinea pig. And I can understand that after a lot of the, for example, the involuntary sterilizations that happened up till until the mid-70s. And so I can understand their concern, but I want to just reiterate, we've been saying to our elders, we need you. You are a vital part of our community. And I'm glad for those people who are responding and answering the reason they're taking of their vaccines is because of their community. And I think that's something that's a very vital part of our culture and our value system.
Well, thank you for that. And Larry, as we get ready to wrap up, any other words about protecting our elders?
I would like to just commend the tribes that have taken very aggressive steps in protecting our elders, such as declaring emergencies, public health emergencies right from the very beginning, telling our elders to stay home, closing down the casinos. I know that creates another economic hardship. And some tribes have even closed off their reservations. And that, I think, is a very proactive. I think it was something that was very much needed, and it does protect our elders. And I think that one of the things I just like to mention in all of this has been the fact that a lot of our Title VI programs that provide services to our elders have come up with some very unique ways of dealing with the COVID in this particular era. And so, you know, for me, it has been our elders have exhibited a tremendous amount of resilience. And that is something that I'm very pleased that that's what's happening out in Indian country.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And we got to wrap things up here today. We're starting off the week. If there was more you wanted to add to this conversation, there are a couple of ways you can reach out to us. You can always comment directly on our website, nativeamericacalling.com, or you can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we are on Facebook. Our Twitter handle is @1-800-99-NATIVE. And thank you to everybody that we heard from in this hour. Thank you to Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, Dr. Donna Galbraith, Larry Curley, and Abigail Echo Hawk. And we are back tomorrow with a Native in the Spotlight. We're going to be talking with Kevin Washburn and hearing about his efforts and his work with the current administration, their transition team, and making priorities for this upcoming administration, as well as some of the work he's done throughout Native America. I hope you'll join us. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea, working to fully restore Bears Ears National Monument by asking the Biden administration to fulfill the original vision of protection for 1.9 million acres with meaningful co-management by tribes. It's time we respect ancestral lands and our collective American heritage by listening to and learning from tribes on stewardships of these cultural landscapes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org.
Gegu na giwi ishichige ganawain and dizilyan ani oshki bibung, mi ishigwa dawaj ge du daman ge dani mino ayayan. Ganoj eno ki de nishinabe akuzi wigamigung nawaj jige kain daman, ma wadishiwain healthcare.gov, ge ma ganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.